The North Texas stories you need to know. This is the All Local from News Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Austin York, and this is the Afternoon All Local.
A big meeting at Dallas City Hall yesterday. City Council meeting discussing an issue that has been, as they say, hanging fire for quite some time. The Dallas Police Department went over its overtime budget last year, and
just
they went
over
by just a skosh.
Just a bit outside.
By $11 million last year. That included one sergeant who earned...
I love this.
Sergeant who earned $300,000, making him the department's highest-paid employee in 2023. He made more than the chief.
Half of that was overtime.
Overtime. So yesterday, police officials presented a plan to city council to help rein in that overtime spending and looking ahead as well, focusing on retention and hiring more officers. David Goines, with our partners at NBC5, he covered that meeting yesterday, joins us live right now on KRLD. Nice money if you can get it, I suppose.
Hey, if the hours are there and that's what you're asking for,
I'll take them.
I mean, that's what's happening within the police department.
If they are being offered, they'll take them. What were some of the proposals by DPD to help cut down on the spending?
Yeah, Mike and Austin, you kind of hit it off the top. You know, the amount of overtime spending from DPD's perspective will go down when they have more officers. Well, how do you get more officers? They can do that in two ways, which is they talked about the ability to recruit new officers through their academy. DPD plans to add about 250 new officers this year. The hope is to do that again next year and the year after. But here's the thing. You can add those officers, but if you're losing close to 200 officers a year, the ability to build up your force is slow. And when you're chronically below the target of 3,600 officers DPD chief, Eddie Garcia has said that's what he wants, you're going to incur these overtime costs. And that's kind of what you're seeing. So some of the strategies to reduce overtime usage, bottom line, add more officers. A couple ways to do that is to get the amount of officers who are already here, get them to stay through different retention policies, different retention strategies, really. It's not really a policy as much as it is a strategy. That's what they've been trying to work towards. Over the last couple of weeks, they talked about yesterday a couple of those retention strategies. One would be to allow the entire department to go to 4-day work weeks. That would cut down on the amount of overtime. It would also improve morale from Chief Garcia. The other one deals with allowing officers to sell back their unused sick time so they can actually get money for unused sick time, lowering their incentive to just burn sick time. Because like if you either use it or lose it, that would potentially have some money set aside to keep that from happening. And also provide a financial incentive, a very modest $1,000 for an officer who's able to recruit an officer to come into the department. That is under interim city manager Kim Tolbert's budget for next year. So it's a wonky issue, but when you've got so many different, retention strategies to try to keep your officers here, and if you keep the officers in the department and you're adding more officers to the academy, your numbers go up and your reliance on OT steadily will go down over time.
You know, I followed this meeting yesterday as well. I heard that some of these retention plans are working. But let's talk about the numbers. How many officers do they need, and how many are they short right now?
So right now they're about 3,070, 3,080, kind of fluctuates, just under 3,100. Let's just call it a little bit under 3,100. Go back 10 years ago, 2015, they were about 3,600. When Eddie Garcia came in as police chief in late 2020, obviously the focus was on violent crime reduction. That focus continues, and he pointed to the results, positive results of violent crime reduction, saying, yes, there is overtime costs, and it is substantial, but he feels the taxpayers are getting a good return on their investment when you look at overall violent crime numbers being down. But he would like to see this department get back to that 3,600 level and then see where they go from there. He thinks that could happen as soon as 2033, and I know that's 9 years. It seems like a long time, but it takes time to get these officers through the academy trained up and get them on the force.
Yeah, so in talking about retention policies, David, wouldn't a key part of any retention policy have to be paying more to these officers so they don't run off to the suburbs after a couple of years.
Yeah, that's a good point. And one thing they brought up was they looked at like a statistic on, you know, who's leaving, what type of officers are leaving. About 37% of officers that are leaving are doing so through retirement. However, a larger percentage, 44%, are officers that are leaving who've been with the department for less than 5 years. Obvious question is, why are they leaving? Well, they don't really know because there's no exit interview to say, why are you leaving? You could assume, and a lot of officers do leave DPD to go to higher paying departments in North Texas. One thing that they're working on is continuing to increase salary as time goes on. And that is happening. One thing they've talked about, not so much yesterday, but recently with the budget, is that DPD, the plan is to increase salary by 7% for officers who are existing and new as they come into the department.
Good enough, David. Good information. We really appreciate the time. That is NBC5's David Goines. He's been covering this at City Hall, the overtime situation in the DPD. Another thing about you, you go off to the suburbs, a lot of these officers, I guess it depends on the suburbs, but it's going to be a less stressful job, too, you would imagine.
Yeah, and they say you got big city experience. You come down here, you make $30,000, $40,000 sometimes more than you would make in Dallas. Why wouldn't you want to go?
And it's an easier job.
Yeah, and people kind of like you out there. You're kind of looked up to.
KCBS reporter Doug Sovereign, he's been covering the DNC for us, as he did with the Republicans a few weeks ago in Milwaukee. He joins us right now. So tell us about last night and the reception for Tim Walz. How did he do? It was kind of an emotional, he teared up there on stage, and his family certainly did down in the crowd.
Yeah, that was incredibly emotional. And I'll get to that in a second, but I just want to say I agree with you that last night wasn't as strong a night, and the energy level wasn't as high. I do agree with that. But, after that Tuesday night with the Obamas, which was just off the charts, Hillary Clinton the night before, they couldn't quite match that. But that may be planned and good for Kamala Harris in that you get one night that's not as strong before she goes. I mean, she doesn't want to go the night after Michelle Obama and Barack Obama, though the comparison would be too direct. So a little time has passed. Now she can soar tonight if she can, and then she'll look better in comparison. But, yeah, that was incredibly emotional with the Walz family. I mean, his kids, his wife. I mean, his wife was basically crying the entire speech. His son, Gus, so sweet and adorable. And he's like, that's my dad. And he's crying. I mean, it was really moving. And, they have a big screen of the Jumbotron, whatever we call it these days, a big screen scoreboard where you're seeing the images of what's on stage. So the delegates, even if they couldn't really see that happening in the cutaway shots, they would look up and see that. So I think they all saw it. And certainly the national audience on TV saw it. And it was really moving to me more than the speech itself, which was fine. It was, I thought he leaned a little too heavily into the high school football coach bit. I said this earlier this morning on another station in Texas that, I know high school football is huge in Texas, but it just seemed a little, I mean, it took me back to my days playing football as a kid. I felt like the coach was yelling at me at halftime or something like that. But obviously that was the persona they went with. And I think the delegates loved it. They're all waving the Coach Walz signs. But I thought they sort of beat that metaphor into the ground a little bit.
You mentioned this earlier in the week that this was like everyone at this convention, they've gone right at Donald Trump. Will Kamala Harris continue that tonight or will she go a different route?
I would expect she would not do it as much as the other speakers have, although her big tagline on the stump has been, I know his type. I prosecuted predators and fraudsters. I know his type. Now, she may just say my opponent or something like that. I think she's got her whole thing is I'm going to prosecute the case against Donald Trump. So she's got to come out today and say, I'm Kamala Harris for the people, as she used to say as a courtroom prosecutor. So if you're going to go that route, you can't not mention the defendant, right? In this case, Donald Trump. So, but I wonder if that won't be the main part of her speech and if she maybe doesn't mention him by name or if she does only a couple of times. Remember, the Republican convention a month ago, at the outset, it was, we're going to have a kinder, gentler tone. We're going to dial it down. They did not mention Biden or Harris by name the first day or two after the assassination attempt. It was, can't we all come together? By the end of that week, of course, they were going after them both, and they were increasingly thinking it might be Kamala Harris opposing them instead. So they started to say the Biden-Harris administration a lot. But, of course, that has been thrown out the window a month later, and they've gone after Donald Trump relentlessly at this convention. As you heard there, it's getting under his skin a little bit. So I think she will somewhat, but I would be surprised if she makes that the main thrust of her remarks tonight.
You know, you mentioned the Republican National Convention. It seemed like every night there was a new theme, including even when former President Trump spoke. What do you think the theme is for Vice President Harris tonight?
They have had a theme here. They've had a theme each night, but it hasn't been as clear and as much a part of the programming as the Republicans were. Republicans were like, make America wealthy again. Make America, I forget what it was, free again, whatever. Each night they had a different one, and they really focused the programming on that. They've had themes here, but they're a little more nebulous. Tonight it's about the future. It's something like facing the future or toward the future or something like that. It's got future in it. But so they're going to look forward. I mean, the whole point of tonight is, okay, we've trashed Trump for a few days. We've laid all this stuff. Tonight, let's look forward. What comes next? It's kind of like what we always were taught in journalism. When you write your story at the end, try to end with something that looks ahead to what's next or what's coming up. So that you move people forward. So that's kind of what they're going to do tonight. They're going to focus on the future and next and forward. And I'm sure you'll hear from her something about we've got 75 days or whatever it is at this point, 74, 75 days. I guess it's 75. This is the work we got to do. Let's get out there. Let's vote, because we have to fight. Because when we fight, we win. I mean, you're going to hear stuff like that.
Your time's running out, Doug. You got time, I think, for one final deep dish in Chicago before this thing ends.
Yeah, I've had some hot beef, whatever we call it, Chicago Italian beef, which everyone loves these days. I haven't had a Chicago dog. I'm not a big fan of the Chicago dog. They put too much stuff on it, you know?
Oh, the tomatoes. But,
yeah, that's a little much for me.
Tomatoes, that's fine. Celery and salt? I don't need celery and salt on a hot dog.
No.
You know?
I'm trying to eat healthy here. Come on. I'm eating a Chicago dog.
KCBS reporter Doug Sovereign. He is with us at the DNC this week. Doug, thanks so much. Appreciate it. It's 11:18 now at KRLD. We're going to go around town.
Denton school bus driver in trouble. Students say he drove erratically. The district's transportation director sent home a letter to parents about everything that happened on Tuesday. Student's mom called the police about this driving. She told the cops that she tried to confront the driver, and he shut the bus door on her a bunch of times. When they got to the scene, several kids said they hit their heads when the driver slammed on the brakes. They checked him out. All the kids are okay. The district put the driver on leave as the police continue the investigation.
Well, a new poll says the race for the White House has now gotten a whole lot tighter in Texas.
In July, former President Donald Trump had a 9-point advantage over then-candidate President Joe Biden. But now that Biden is out and Vice President Kamala Harris is in, the latest figures from a University of Houston poll shows Trump leading Harris by just 5 points. Rice political science professor Mark Jones, who is one of the authors of the poll, explains.
Harris's boost really comes from two groups of June voters, people who are undecided and people who had intended to vote for RFK Jr., and demographically are concentrated among younger voters, Gen Z, as well as among women voters.
He believes Harris might have hit her high water mark in Texas and Trump will win the state. Jones says Harris's favorability rating has skyrocketed 11 points since June. From the 24-hour news center, Austin York, News Radio 1080, KRLD.
Well, he's suspected of helping coordinate a smuggling attempt 2 years ago. It ended with 53 deaths in San Antonio. Well, he's now under arrest in Guatemala.
Not only do we seek justice for the deceased and those who are injured, but we aim to send a message to others involved in smuggling of humans.
That's Jaime Esparza, the U.S. attorney for the Western District. The U.S. is working to extradite Rigoberto Miranda Orozco to the U.S. He's charged with 6 counts of smuggling. This is the deadliest human smuggling attempt across the border. He could get life in prison if he's convicted.
The All Local is updated 3 times a day. For the latest news, weather, and traffic, listen to News Radio 1080 KRLD. Visit KRLD.com, download the Odyssey app, or ask your smart speaker to play News Radio 1080 KRLD.